This is Artbeat, WMUK's weekly look at creativity in the arts in Southwest Michigan. I'm Zinta A-Stars. Kelly Daniels has lived life large. He's traveled the world, lived in a commune, in a van, and in a desert cabin. One of the places he lived that became the setting for his new novel, A Candle for San Simon, was Guatemala. Now living and teaching in Iowa, Daniels is an alumnus of Western Michigan University. He reads an excerpt from his book.
Moving toward the light, Max came to an island of burning candles in a lake of melted wax, separating him and the rest of the congregation from a barefoot man in an Oxford shirt tucked into a striped Mayan kilt. While the man gestured and shouted, a still figure sat beside him in a rocking chair. For an instant, Max thought that chair held a corpse, but then he recognized the thing as a doll, a department store mannequin hidden under the brim of a Houston Astros baseball cap and behind mirrored aviator sunglasses. A scarf covered the mouth, and the idol otherwise wore a wide-lapelled sports coat from the 70s, a dress shirt with a thick tie, and slacks tucked into knee-high, furry boots designed for ski vacations. Members of the congregation set money, candles, cans of beer, cigarettes, and bottles of spirits on the floor in front of the idol. The shaman attending the mannequin upended a large bottle of the local rot gut called Quetzalteca, pouring the clear stuff into a small glass, showy as an uptown bartender. He spoke in a husky smoker's voice, then rocked the figure back in its chair, slipped the bandana from the face, and fed it the alcohol.
Kelly, can you give us a synopsis of the novel? It's a very new book, and we want to entice those listeners to pick it up.
It's a story of a born-again Christian young man who gets a chance to go and do mission work in Guatemala, where his wayward father that had abandoned him when he was a child happens to be kind of whiling away his years, drinking himself to death. And so the son finds it almost a sign from God that he needs to make amends with his father. That's the sort of literary relationship aspect of it. And then the thriller part of it is that they get in over their heads with a bunch of vicious gangsters and criminals who kind of trap them into having to work a bunch of dangerous jobs. And so there's a bunch of shoot 'em up kind of elements interrupting the father-son reunion.
You know, it kind of sounds to me like this would make a good movie, don't you think?
Yeah, sure. I do think so. I kind of see it very visually, and that's how I wrote it. And so, yeah, it does kind of seem to proceed scene by scene in the way that movies do.
You are a visual writer. I think that you have traveled so much in your life, and you've had a very adventurous life. From the bits and pieces I've looked at your bio and read about your memoir, Cloudbreak, I would think that really adds to a writer's toolbox, that you have all that experience, all that color to bring to your work. How important do you think it is to live life big, maybe before you ever sit down to the written page?
I think there are different kinds of writers. Emily Dickinson is the most famous kind of writer who barely left her house and yet is one of the great poets of all history in English, for sure. But I'm more of the Hemingway school of going out and experiencing life. And I suppose my imagination isn't quite enough by itself. And plus, I want to live an interesting life.
This is Artbeat on WMUK. I'm Zinta A-Stars. Tell a little bit more about going down there for research. What did you do? What kind of things did you involve yourself in for that?
I found a very inexpensive ticket to Guatemala, and there was a little bit of research money, just grant money that was available to me. I'm talking in the area of like $300 or $400 kind of thing. And I thought, this is a great time to take advantage of this. And I had, a couple of weeks maybe or 10 days, and I just kind of flew in there. Part of it was just remembering how to take the buses and how that whole thing works. And I spent the night in Antigua, which is a really beautiful, fancy, and even kind of an expensive city for Guatemala. They have million-dollar houses there because of the foreigners who go there. And then I jumped on one of the buses that are so important to the book and that fascinate me. We call them chicken buses, you know, but they're these old United States school buses that are decommissioned, and Guatemalans make this epic journey up north, and these are just entrepreneurs that go up and buy them at auction, take them all the way back down to Guatemala, and then rebuild them and paint them these amazing colors. And they keep them running for decades, and they go everywhere. A stranger can just pop down into anywhere in Guatemala, go to any corner, catch a bus probably within 15 minutes, and find their way anywhere in the country. It's an amazingly efficient, or maybe not efficient, it takes a while, but it's comprehensive, user-friendly, and very cheap. And so I hopped on this bus and had this great experience of being kind of packed in with all these indigenous people and local Guatemalans. I was the only non-local there. And they get so packed in these buses that this American kind of sense of personal space that we have, I kind of was thought I might have a bench to myself. And I was very wrong. Like, I got every stop, more people would come on. And pretty soon there was a full-grown man, kind of this whatever middle-aged small guy in a cowboy hat, just fully sitting on my lap for about 25 minutes. And I was just thinking, it was just hilarious, really. But I also was thinking how good that is for, I guess, ideas of bigotry or feeling scared of the other, the dangerous other. Like when somebody's sitting in your lap for a half an hour on a bus, it's hard to fear them and see them as a scary stranger.
That's true.
So we went there, and then we went to a place called Xela. Quetzaltenango is the Spanish word for it. And it's just... And spent a couple nights there and wandered around and just tried to see some of the spots in the country to remember how things work on a basic level, and how things look and feel and smell, and ate some food and talked to some folks.
This is your first novel, but not your first book. As I mentioned before, you had a memoir, Cloudbreak, and you wrote about, in that memoir, you wrote about a complicated relationship with your own father, who spent time in prison for selling drugs. There's some echoes of that in this novel. Did this help you kind of explore that relationship a little bit more, or was that something you did on purpose?
Yeah, a lot of people have made that connection, and it is sort of an obvious one.
Yeah.
But I think it was more, and that's not a criticism of the question by any means. I didn't think that I wanted to explore the relationship with my father in this novel. I really did that in the memoir, and kind of explored it to the point where I just didn't want to. I didn't need to pick at that scab anymore. But obviously just the idea of estranged fathers and sons is just an idea that's just there in me.
I'm Zinta A-Stars. You've been listening to WMUK's Artbeat, our weekly look at the creative arts. I've been speaking with Kelly Daniels, the author of A Candle for San Simon. Visit WMUK.org to hear more of our conversation. And join us every Friday at this time for Artbeat. Thanks for listening.